Parsha begins with Avram Avinu sitting in his tent in Elonei Mamre, post Brit Milah, recovering from the ordeal of the Brit Milah. And I'm sure you guys have heard this Devar Torah maybe 20 times already this week, but just in case, I'll say it again, that why does the Torah have to tell us where Avraham was? Who cares if it was in Elonei Mamre? When you're writing your autobiographies, and you're going to tell me what room, tell the world what room you were in Reuben, that might be important, but do we really need to know which side of the room you were sitting on? Okay, Avraham Avinu was in Eretz Yisrael, who cares? It was in Elonei Mamre. It doesn't matter to us who the owner of the building was. I'm not going to write in my autobiography the owner of my apartment building. It's a waste of space. Why does the Torah tell us that this is Elonei Mamre? Does anybody know who was Mamre? So the Torah tells us that Avraham Avinu had three consultants, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. They were his three, you know, directors of activities. And Avraham Avinu, when it came time to do the Brit Milah, was sort of taken aback. His entire life so far had been dedicated to spreading monotheism, spreading HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, and basically denouncing idolatry. Idolatry includes human sacrifice. It includes humiliation, human mutilation, not humiliation, sorry. And it's quite the strange thing how Avram, who spent this whole time standing out and denouncing all of those practices, is being asked to do them. And he says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm risking losing all of my followers. And I've brought them so far. How can I basically keep the Torah and be a cool rabbi also? How can I keep the Torah and be someone who seems to be upstanding if I give off this somewhat contradictory affect and person and set of practices? He's not wrong. In other words, there are plenty of people in history who claim to be great and were called out for being not. Shabbatai Tzvi, I'm sure you'll find out in your history classes, you know, basically convinced much of Europe and Turkey and other countries that he was Mashiach. And it was evidently clear until two things happened. Number one, he kept on violating the mitzvot, but people said, oh, he's Mashiach, he has a Horat Shah. And then when he converted to Islam and married a non-Jew, then that was like the final straw. And then he was killed. So that also, you know, denied his being Mashiach. But for some reason, people thought he would come back. Avraham Avinu was not wrong that doing things that seem to contradict what you preach will turn people away. So what did he do? He consulted with his three friends, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. And I think the way it goes, the Midrashim say, is that Avraham Avinu complained, no one's going to come to me anymore. And Aner and Eshkol, one of them said, okay, so don't do the Brit Milah at all. One of them said, do it privately. No one should know. And Mamre said, no, do it publicly. And Avraham listened. It says, Ve'etzem hayom hazeh v'aymol Avraham. Avraham Avinu did the Milah publicly in broad daylight for everybody to see. As much as he was disturbed and of it negating his goals of life and vision to bring in the entire world to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu realized that he has to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu first. And that's why, because Avraham Avinu listened to Mamre, this week's parsha begins with Elonei Mamre. Avraham Avinu is on Mamre's property. The Torah is saying how Avraham is recovering on Mamre's property to appreciate Mamre, to honor him with a nevuah taking place on his property and giving him a shout out for saying the right thing. As much as we think we know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, this is Hashem's plan for me in life, is to do X, Y, or Z, not A, B, or C. It's not for me to do. I can tell you I think like that all the time, about what kind of job I'm going to take, what kind of career I'm going to have, what kind of family I'm going to raise, all sorts of things. I'm sure Ethan can relate to this very much, how in some communities, you are basically like raised thinking you must marry this type of girl. I'm sure like some, I have many friends whose mothers and grandmothers would basically, you know, like, you know, excommunicate them if they married a non-Persian. Kol Shekein, Ethan, if he marries a non-Meshadi, his grandmother will never want to speak to him ever again. No? Okay, Baruch Hashem. But it's very possible that there are many people in the community who feel that way. We have certain priorities in life. We have certain expectations of what will be and what our goals are. I'm also Persian, but I'm not Meshadi. I always just assumed that I'm going to marry a Persian girl. And I did. I just had to make her Persian first. My wife used to be, yeah, and now she's
no, not. My grandma wouldn't talk to me, actually.
She wouldn't talk to you? Okay. No. When I was in high school, I went to Hank. Hank is a co-ed high school, which is basically half Ashkenazi, half Sfaradi. And most of the Sfaradim are Persian. So, and back then, at least, there was a lot of great Net guys who were coming to Hank. And a lot of Ashkenazim from West Hempstead, a lot of people from Queens. They all came to Hank. So it was totally common, totally normal for the, and please excuse the language, but it was totally normal for the Persian guys, especially the Meshadi guys in my grade, to flirt with Ashkenazi girls. And I used to joke with them. There were different points where like different people would point out, hey, you guys are Meshadi, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. Your mothers will never let this happen. I said, no, it's okay. We're moving on. Our community is changing. We're all going to marry Ashkenazi. Watch. Not a single one of them did. Only a couple of the Meshadi girls married Ashkenazi, and they brought their husbands into the community. So I'm the only one who did at this point, I think. I have to think about that a bit harder, but at this point, my grade, I'm the only one who did. Maybe one other person, but either way, it doesn't really count. So we have expectations for ourselves. We think that my goal in life is to do X, Y, or Z. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us to do something. That means put your goals aside. You don't really know what Hashem wants. When Hashem comes and tells you to do this, that means that you misunderstood this whole time. Or until now, Hashem said, okay, now you have to shift to something else. What is it that Avraham Avinu has to shift to? Rav Kook explains that Avraham Avinu needs to shift to taking care of Yitzchak. That he has to let go of the outside world. It's time for Avraham Avinu to not be Mr. Kiruv the same way. And it's okay if people leave. It's okay if people abandon him. In fact, Avraham Avinu even sent away his own concubines and their children after Yitzchak was born, and eventually sent away Ishmael as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Avraham to concentrate his energies on raising Yitzchak, educating him. Yitzchak is the seed for repairing and completing the entire world. It was necessary to first nurture the initial Kedusha of Am Yisrael and the enlightenment and elevation of the world that Avram so desired would be realized through the spiritual influence of his children. Sometimes you think that I am going to be the one to fix this, that, or the other thing. And we should strive. We should aspire with a passion to do great things. But it doesn't always mean that we will be the one to do it. We might have to be the one to set up the framework for it to happen. David HaMelech so badly wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Dam Rav Shafachta, you spilled so much blood that I will not let you build Beiti Beit Tefillah L'chol HaAmim. I will not let you build the Bayit that is for all of Am Yisrael and the entire world to be B'Shalom. Rav Soloveitchik has a slightly different take on this perspective, on this idea. Rabbi Avishai David, the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Shraga in Yerushalayim, which I'm sure you guys have either visited or heard of. Rabbi Avishai David has a book about Rav Soloveitchik where he goes through a lot of the drashot he heard from Rav Soloveitchik back when he was a rabbi in Connecticut. And he used to visit Boston on Motzei Shabbat to hear Rav Soloveitchik speak. It's called Darosh Darash Yosef. I remember one time Rabbi David came and gave a Sichat Musar in our Beit Midrash in Gluck, maybe like 6-7 years ago. And he said over one of these pieces and said, I recommend a great sefer for all of you to open up. It's called Darosh Darash Yosef. And it was very cute how you're all laughing. Okay, so David says, Avraham Avinu was afraid of the risk of alienation, as we mentioned, and how it would undermine his mission to spread monotheism throughout the world. So in fact, part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to Avraham Avinu, when he speaks to him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, is Ani El Shaddai, Italech lefanai veheyet tamim. Go in front of me. I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm El Shaddai. Walk before me and be perfect. Rashi says, Ani hu sheyesh dai ve'elahuto lechol beria. I am the one whose divinity, my elahut, is enough for everybody. Lefichach italech lefanai. Therefore, you should walk before me. Ve'elacha. Lo lobe ve'lo lepatron. I will be your God and your patron. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu assumed that Avram thought he's going to be alone. No one will want him. No one will want to be with him. And therefore the response was that you're afraid of losing a relationship. You don't need those people. You have me, El Shaddai. Shaddai is from El Sha'amar La'olam Dai, the one who told the world it is enough. Limiting the expansion that would otherwise have continued. You have to stop. You, Avraham, take a break. Take a pause from Kiruv and focus. Don't worry about being alone. Don't be reluctant. You thought until now you have to be an Av Hamon Goyim, and you're right. But, he says, you won't be able to complete that in your lifetime. You started the mission. You started the process. But I'm telling you that your goal is to develop a nation, not the world. That nation will be very small in numbers, but very powerful in faith. And Am Segula, and they're going to be the covenantal community that will teach the Yichud HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the unity of God. And that mitzvah that will always keep them apart from the Gentile world is Brit Milah. Essentially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying that I want you to be different. You will always be different. We do things in such different ways, in relation to some nations, at least the way that we write, the direction that we write, the way we calculate our calendars, the way we practice different life cycle events, the way we dress, we will always be different from them. But it doesn't matter. All you need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, is my friendship and nobody else's. That was a similar idea from Soloveitchik that I think pairs very nicely with this idea of Rav Kook. Moving on in the parsha, we have Avraham Avinu is visited by the three malachim, and he essentially wants to do the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. Just as a comment, we always think of hachnasat orchim, as I told you guys, I can't wait to have you over for a meal in my apartment for Shabbat once things clear up. But it should be very clear that you guys all have dormitories, you guys all have apartments, you have homes. There is no mitzvah of hachnasat orechim for me to bring you over. It's purely a chesed, but it's not hachnasat orechim. Hachnasat orechim, the Rama writes, is if somebody literally has nowhere else to go, he has nowhere else to turn, and you take him in, that's called hachnasat orechim. He has no other food, that's called hachnasat orechim. But enjoying yourselves, Rav Schechter says, enjoying yourselves and having a good time, saying Lashon Hara, that's a different mitzvah. It's actually an Avera, but it's not Hachnasat Orchim. So it's important to realize what exactly are the goals, what is one accomplishing by having people over for a Shabbat meal. It's a beautiful thing to have a yeshiva environment and everything, but the mitzvah of Hachnasat Orchim, it is not. If you were sitting at the crossroads in the desert with a tent, with food and provisions, and there are people who are passing by with nothing, and that's a huge mitzvah. If you're inviting yeshiva guys over, it's a different mitzvah, but it's not the same mitzvah. Avraham Avinu is asked by the malachim, where is Sarah Ishtecha? And Avraham Avinu answers, anybody know the answer? Where is Sarah Ishtecha? Famous two words. She was in the tent. She was at home. Sarah Imenu did not venture out, did not join the party. She stayed inside of the tent. She was being Sanua. People misunderstand Rav Shechter always says. This is one of his core ideas in Hashkafa. And people very much misunderstand what Siniut means. Modesty does not just mean how one dresses. It means to live a private life, an anonymous life, that we don't tell the world that we're here. We have to be just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We have to emulate Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an El Mistater. He's a hidden God. He hides himself so well that sometimes people don't even know that he's there. He hides himself so well. But we can't always do that. We want to be just like Hashem and hide ourselves. But we can't always do that. We need leaders. Sometimes we need people to go to work. Those people have to violate their tziniut for the public or the private cause. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes he reveals himself to us and tells us something. That's called a Gilui Shekhinah. A woman has an extra level of tziniut. There's nothing wrong with a woman being the queen, except Melech Velo Malka. It's not Sanua. It's not appropriate for a woman to be the one to violate her tziniut. It's more appropriate for a man to be the one to violate his tziniut. A woman should maintain it and not let it go. Of course, if the better option, the better candidate is a woman, if the man is going to destroy the country and a woman will not, she'll fix it. So then we can talk about that. It happens oftentimes when shuls have to pick a president and they want to have a female president. So it all depends. Is it the man? Is the male candidate going to destroy the shul? Is he going to fire the rabbi and ruin things? And the woman is going to make things much better? So then great, pick the woman. But otherwise, when it comes to tziniut, one has to make sure that not just the women, but also men are making sure that we're acting appropriately societally and staying away. Stay out, stay home. Do your best. Rav Shechter would probably say, and it's the best thing now to be working from home. Because you don't have to be out there in the public. You don't have to be out there in front of other people. It's most appropriate for us to, in everything we do, to find ways to not be flaunting ourselves into the public eye, but to find ways to do things in a tzanua way. We don't need the credit. We don't need the recognition for certain things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that we're doing that. Why do we have to seek other people's approval, seek other people's kavod? Now, in terms of Sidom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the three malachim to destroy Sodom, but first he wants to tell Avraham Avinu about how terrible it is. In fact, he has a whole dialogue with Avraham Avinu, and there's a whole back and forth. Avraham Avinu says that if there are a certain number of tzaddikim, 40 tzaddikim, maybe Hashem, there are some tzaddikim in there, and Hashem says, if there were, I wouldn't destroy the world, but there isn't that many. And the number keeps on going down, and down and down, from 40 to 30 to 20 tzaddikim. Maybe there are just a few tzaddikim in there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 50 tzaddikim, that you would spare the five towns. Hashem eventually destroyed the five towns, not the ones in Long Island, but the other five towns. And then there's a very interesting thing. Once we get to 20, goes to 10. The thing is that there weren't 10. And Midrash says that Avraham Avinu was asking for 10 people, 10 tzaddikim, who were not the most outstanding tzaddikim. Like mini tzaddikim, medium level tzaddikim, not so junior tzaddikim, nothing major. Nothing major. The question is why? Why did he speak about it in such a way that he was looking for medium-level tzaddikim? So the Gemara in Ta'anit tells a very interesting story. There was once a town in which Rav lived. And there was also this doctor who gave people free medical treatment. So there was a fire and half of the town burnt down. And in the town, the half that Rav lived in burnt down entirely except for Rav's house. And the half that the doctor lived in was spared altogether. That means that half of the town burnt down, but only half that Rav lived in, and not the one with the doctor. So it seems like it's a big deal. So, in fact, it was the zechut of the doctor that saved half of the town. So the Maharashtra says, how do you know that it's the zechut of the doctor? Like, are you guys HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You have nevuah? How do you know that it was the zechut of the doctor? How do you know that it was the zechut of the doctor that saved the town, half of the town? So the Rav Shechter always quotes the Sifat Emet. He quotes his grandfather, the Chidush HaRim, who says that if a person is a colossal tzaddik deserves a very poignant miracle. And that means that if an entire town should be destroyed and that tzaddik is living there, then the entire town minus the tzaddik and his area will be destroyed. But if a person is a minor tzaddik, he's not such an outstanding tzaddik, but he's also a tzaddik. He has some zechuyot, beautiful, but he doesn't deserve such a major miracle. He deserves a more minor miracle. What's a more minor miracle than the entire town burning down except for your house? The town not burning down at all. Now put them together. Rav lives on one side of the town, and this doctor lives on the other side of the town. Rav is a colossal tzaddik. This doctor is a normal tzaddik. So Rav's side of the town burns down entirely, and he gets the major miracle of his house not burning. Whereas the doctor doesn't get a major miracle, so the entire half of the town is saved. You guys are too young for this. I'm also too young for this. There was once upon a time a war in Eretz Yisrael. Believe it or not, there was once a war in Eretz Yisrael. 1990s was the Gulf War. And there, 1990-1991. So the Gulf War, they were shooting Scuds. They were threatening to shoot Scuds into Eretz Yisrael. And everyone was in pandemonium, getting gas masks and running for bunkers all the time when rockets were shot at Eretz Yisrael, at Yerushalayim. And lots of people were not sure what to do. There were a lot of Americans studying in yeshiva that year, and a lot of them were starting to come back in the middle of the year. You guys had to come back from your year in Israel in March. These guys were coming back in like December, January. Mamash right into the beginning of the year, and at least half of the year. So YU, they were chartered a plane. Somebody chartered a plane and offered for YU students to get on the plane and go give chizuk, to go learn in Eretz Yisrael, go spend a few weeks there during January break, and to be a present there. We're not afraid to be here. We're going to learn Torah here. Everything is going to be okay. And they loaded up this plane with YU and Stern students. It was a co-ed plane. I know because my father-in-law and my mother-in-law were on that plane before they got engaged, sitting together. And or they were already engaged. I don't know. I hear different versions of the story. They were already engaged. Okay. They got on this plane to go learn in Eretz Yisrael for a couple weeks. So apparently my father-in-law didn't tell his parents that he was going, and only his sisters knew. And it was a secret. He didn't want to scare his mother. So he got on the plane, didn't tell anybody. And then he gets to Eretz Yisrael, and he gets a phone call from my wife's aunt saying they know where you are. He said, "How do you know where I am?" He said, "Because there was a camera live streaming on live broadcast of the plane landing and everybody getting off of the plane when you landed, and they were watching TV and saw you get off of the plane." Can you imagine what that's like to see your son get off of a plane into a war zone? It must be pretty crazy. So anyway, the YU guys and girls were in Eretz Yisrael for a few weeks. Rav and Rebbetzin Shechter were there too. And they Torah Traga rent space from the Gross Kolel, which is YU's building in Yerushalayim. So a lot of the YU people were there for Shabbat in the Gross Kolel in Torah Traga. So there was a guy learning, in the Mir Yeshiva who had been to YU already. He was a YU student. He was learning in the Mir that year. And he came there for Shabbat to be with the YU people. And he was, and at Sudash Lishit, he asked if he could say a Dvar Torah. So he said all of this Dvar Torah. It was Parashat Vayera. No, it wasn't Parashat Vayera. It was the middle of January. And he said over this Dvar Torah from Parashat Vayera about how do we know that that tzaddikim that Avram asked for were minor tzaddikim because of this Gemara in Tani, the story of the doctor, and therefore the Sfat Emet says that minor tzaddikim get miracles that are less overt. And by the way, that's why this week's Parsha, Avram says minor tzaddikim, so that if there's one in every town, so then, or two in every town, whatever, it'll save all of the towns because they'll get a minor miracle of not getting anything destroyed at all, because if they were big tzaddikim, then all the towns would be destroyed except for them. So he tells this over, and he says, you're probably wondering why I decided to come to the Grus Kollel for Shabbat to be here with you, the YU students and Rebbes. Anybody guess? He said, me learning in Beis Yisrael in the Mir, there are all these big tzaddikim. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, this, Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, this one, that one, everyone. There are all these big tzaddikim. If a missile falls, then the entire yeshiva will fall except for these tzaddikim and their homes. But if I'm here in the Gros Kollel, Rav Schechter's here. He's not such a big tzaddik. If a missile falls, nobody will die. It was a joke. It was a joke. Okay. Anyway, so Rav Schechter always says this over every year. Anyway. That was a funny story. Now he's a rabbi in Passaic, that guy, and he's also a rabbi in Stern. It's also interesting, you should note, moving on back into the further in the Parsha, that Avraham Avinu was told that Sodom is so terrible. The people of Sodom were so terrible. What was so terrible about them? What was so terrible about them? So we know that they practiced sodomy, which was not so great. But why did Sodom deserve that the entire town should be destroyed? There were definitely people doing this, committing the same sins all over the world. Why is it that this town was so bad that there had to be divine destruction, annihilation of the town and all of its inhabitants? So Rav Willi quotes the Akedat Yitzchak of Yitzchak Arma'a on this week's Parsha, who says that in his place, Akedat Yitzchak, I believe, lived in Spain, the Yitzchak Arma'a. In his towns, pretty sure it was in Spain. He lived in Spain right right before the expulsions and past the expulsion. He's 1420 to 1494. He complained how there are towns in Spain that, unfortunately, they think that promiscuity is such a problem that people are marrying non-Jews, people are sleeping with each other's wives. We need to control the people. How do we stop them from doing averas? This is literally 550 years ago. How do we stop people from doing averas? What should we do? Let's have the community sponsor a certain number of women who will be available as prostitutes for anybody who needs. That's what the community is going to do. We're going to get the money together. We're going to fund this. And this way we will prevent adultery and intermarriage. And Rav Yitzchak Arma'a says, that's exactly why Sodom and Amorah were destroyed. They institutionalized sin. Evil societies, not evil individuals, are utterly despised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and will not be allowed to survive. They institutionalized sin. Oh, but this way we will prevent people from doing whatever? No, who cares? Who cares? You're not allowed to institutionalize sin. And for that reason, Sodom and Amorah were destroyed. And it's eerie to think that just a few years after this was written by Rabbi Yitzchak Armah, the entire Iberian Peninsula was wiped clean of every single Orthodox Jew. Millions were murdered, and many were Catholicized or the like. The whole history of the Inquisition and expulsion. It's not for us to decide what happened and why. Why what happened happened. But it is certainly a warning that institutionalizing sin is one of the gravest things that a community can do. And Rav Willick said how it's happening today. You have certain communities where they want to open the mikveh for single girls to come use the mikveh, because sleeping with a single girl is not adultery, but it's also yehareg val yavor. One has to give up his life rather than sleep with a single girl because she's nida. And nida is yehareg val yavor. It's an erva. So there are people here in certain communities in New York and beyond, and they want to open the mikveh for single girls because this way the girls won't be nida when they're sleeping with their boyfriends and living together. And that's institutionalizing sin, says Rav Willick. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy. And not just with the single communities drawing lines in all sorts of places, but there are also schools that are not so far from them are teaching high school students that as long as it's consensual and it's done in a certain way, then it's okay. And chas v'shalom to tell them what the Torah has to say about their lives. The Torah has something to say about their lives. No, Rav Willick says. N-O, usser. It is never permissible. And certainly to give even a hint of permissibility to an avera, usser is usser. There is no room to budge. Certainly when it comes to institutionalizing anything. And the Torah concludes with the Akedah. The end of the parasha, the tail end of the parasha is Akedat Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak has so much to it, so much to learn from Avraham Avinu, and how he literally was willing to be Moser Nefesh to do so much for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we can glean a lot from the Akedah. Just a few things to note, that Avraham Avinu was told twice in his life, Lech Lecha, you should go out. Go out for yourself. One of them was, come on guys, everybody should know, where's the first Lech Lecha? Zach?
Moshe?
Huh?
Moshe?
The first Lech Lecha?
Yeah.
Last week's Parsha?
No, I mean Moshe.
Moshe was told Lech. I don't remember any more Parashat Shemot, but I mean right here. I mean just last week's Parsha, the beginning of the Parsha is Lech Lecha.
Avraham,
yeah. Avraham was told Lech Lecha. And he was told again here Lech Lecha. He was told again here Lech Lecha. And Lech Lecha El Eretz HaMoriah. Rabbi Ginnak says, Rabbi Ginnak, you should know, is one of the Rosh Yeshiva here, but he's less involved as a Rosh Yeshiva because he's busy running the OU kosher and making sure that everything stays kosher. But he gives a shir in YU once a week. Rabbi Ginnak also has a sefer in the Parsha where he says that Avraham Avinu was told twice, Lech Lecha. The first one is Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, leave your homeland, leave everything behind. And the second one was Lech Lecha Eretz Amoria, go and sacrifice your son on the Akedah, at the Akedah, on the mountain for me. And he says, it's very interesting, Amiginak says, that these are Avraham's past and his future. He gave up both of them for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave up his past, he said, he left his homeland, his father's home, everything behind for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he gave up his future. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that Yitzchak is going to be his progeny. Ki bi Yitzchak yikare lecha zera. And he left it all behind. He said, you know what? Hashem says, sacrifice my son. I'm going to do it. If Hashem says so, my past and my future, I give them both up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Beis HaLevi says, Beis HaLevi was Rav Soloveitchik's great grandfather. He wrote a sefer called Beis Halevi. He was the first of Yosef Tov Halevi Soloveitchik. And he writes, the Gemara says in Sota that Avraham Avinu said two things about himself. What were the two things Avraham said about himself? Anochi. Zach, you can get this one. Anochi. Avraham said about himself. Afar ve'efer. I am dirt and ashes. Avraham said about himself. And in that zechut, that he was so humble and brought himself so low, he was zoche to two mitzvot. The afar of me sota, the dirt that goes in the dust that goes in the sota waters, to check a woman to make sure that she is indeed pure when there is a sketchy history about how she conducted herself. And efer para aduma, the ashes that go into the para aduma, the red heifer waters, to purify a kohen. And the Beis Halevi says that afar, dirt, has no past. It only has a future. Dirt is usable to plant something in. We learned about Zoreya. And you can also make something out of it. Whereas ashes have no future. You can't do anything with them, but they had a past until they were burnt. Avraham Avinu was saying, I'm both. I'm afar and efer. I'm both ashes and dirt. I have no past. I have no future. Rabbi Ginnak puts it all together. That's what he did when he left Lech Lecha the first time. He let go of his past. And Lech Lecha the second time, he let go of his future for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that zechut, he got the Efer Para Duman, the Afar Sota. Afar Sota cleanses a shady, murky history. And Efer Para Duma purifies one for the future. And that's the chut of being mevatel himself. Everything for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing else matters. He merited to have so much more. And through the Akedah process, Avraham Avinu is said by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be a Yireh Elohim. Hashem says, now I know that you fear Hashem. Now I know that you fear me. What do you mean? Wasn't it obvious? Wasn't it obvious that Avraham Avinu fears God? He brought his son all the way here to serve him, to kill him for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What? It wasn't obvious, like, until the very end that Avraham fears God? So the Nitziv is also in the Soloveitchik family. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. The Nitziv says in Haimek Davar, the Nitziv is a very interesting thinker. He's very much outside of the fold. He's very much outside of the box in how he thinks sometimes about the Torah and about Psukim. He's a very original thinker, the Nitziv. And he says that a regular servant fears the king. He does what the king says, and he doesn't ask questions, even if the king says to kill his own son. Was Avraham Avinu a regular servant? Avraham Ohavi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves Avraham. Avraham loves Hashem. He wasn't a regular servant. He was like the king's best friend. The best friend of the king, if the king says to do something, the best friend is going to try to negotiate, to try to convince the king to do something differently. He's going to try to at least ask why God. Avraham didn't even do that. So when it became abundantly clear, Avraham went all the way without asking why. He just did what Hashem said. And that's when it was clear that Avraham was a true Eved Hashem, that he really feared Hashem. He really feared God. Also note to you a peculiarity in the Pasuk, in the Psukim, not in the Akedah, but earlier, by Lot, that there's a Shalshalet. You guys know what a Shalshalet is? Anybody about Kore? No, but so just do a quick Chazara, what a Shalshalet is. It's actually interesting how Ashkenazim ascribe a tremendous amount of importance to a shalshalet. You see a shalshalet here on the right, under in between Vayomer and shalshalet. So Ashkenazim have one way of pronouncing a shalshalet, which has a very long melody. Shalshalet, which is like very long. It's like three rounds to it, I think. And for Sfaradim, it's more basic. It's a little bit more basic. And Ilan, do you know how to do a shalshalet? You do. I mean, only four of them in the Torah, so you might not have had it for your bar mitzvah parsha. Ethan, what was your bar mitzvah parsha?
I think it was Behar Bahalotcha.
Behar Bahalotcha? Is there a shalshalet there? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. No. Okay. So you wouldn't know. There are four shalshalets in the Torah. I think for Sfaradim, Rabbi Aziz told me that shalshalet is shalshalet, which is so like not interesting, so not outstanding. So Sfaradim might not see it as the same significance, but whatever it is, there are only four shalshalets in the Torah. It's 13 notes. And I once heard a great Sichat Musar from Rav Yonasan Shippel, where he said, Shalshalot is like a chain, and it's there to teach us something incredibly profound. There's a quivering of a back and a forth, an ambivalence and a struggle. Each Shalshalot in the Torah represents a moment of tremendous challenge, ambivalence, and then making the right decision. And that's what we see with Lot. When it was very clear that it's time to leave, Lot hesitated. Should he take his money with him or not? His son-in-laws tried to keep him in, but he made the right decision. He said Hashem instead of his money. Chai in Chaye Sarah, next parasha, Eliezer Eved Avraham also hesitated. He didn't want to take Rivka because he wanted Yitzhak to marry his own daughter. It's another thing. Not just when it comes to money do we struggle sometimes to make the right decisions between Hashem and money. When it comes to marriage also, what are we marrying for? Are we marrying for looks, for yichus, for money? I think the Chafetz Chaim said that all of those things are zeros. Looks, yichus, and money. You need some Yirat Shemayim to go first. If you have Yirat Shemayim, that's the one in front of the zeros. Then all the zeros can be great. But if you don't have that one, then they're zero. They're just zeros. The third one is in Vayeshev. Yosef at Tzadik, he struggles with Eshet Potiphar, the seduction of a young boy, is basically a non-starter. It's a lose from the very beginning, and Yosef hesitated and he won. Yosef hesitated and won. It's self-explanatory that Yosef at Tzadik struggled with his Yetzer Hara for Arayot, but he made the correct decision. And the fourth Shalshalet in the Torah is in Parashat Tzav. And Moshe Rabbeinu, they're shechting the Korbanot. He's enjoying both roles of both the Nasi and the Kohen Gadol, the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that you, from now on, you really only have one role. You're just the Melech. You have to give Aaron a Kohen the role of being Kohen Gadol. And Moshe Rabbeinu embraces it. And Bishippel's point was that the Shalshalet's highlight points of challenge that we can all relate to, whether it be with money, marriage, Yitzhak Hara, for Arayot, and for leadership, for Kavod, for our roles in life. The Shalshalet is the opportunity to take a moment and to make a decision, and make the right decision. He says that it's very interesting. The word suicide in English, the end of the word, side, C-I-D-E, means to kill. Suicide, kill oneself, genocide, homicide. What do you do when you decide? the same ending. Decide. He says you kill all the other options when you decide. And he says that we're all compared to the stars, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we're like the Kochavim. Each and every one of us is a star. And we all have the capability to express HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shefa on this world in our own unique way. We're not affected by the other stars because we are also stars. We have to realize who we are in order to make those crucial decisions that kill all other options. The Shalshalat HaYuchasin, we're here because we have our Zichut Avot. We have the chain, like the Shalshalat, of our Avot and Imahot who made the correct decisions to ensure that our Shalshalat, our Mesorah, our traditions would continue. And now it's our turn to step up to the plate. Each of you is still in the middle of the latent tikufa of your lives where you can make decisions that can literally affect you and your families for generations. Where do you go to yeshiva? What do you do with your time? Whom do you marry? Where do you live? What are the things you spend your time doing? Are you learning Torah? Are you doing things you shouldn't be? Are you only studying? Are you only learning Torah? Are you cheating on your tests? Are you taking it honestly? All of those things. Whom do you hang out with? How do you spend your weekends? All of those things can have a tremendous impact on you now more than ever. If you take a protractor and you draw an angle, if you just change the angle in the very beginning, it doesn't look like it makes a big difference. But the longer you draw out the line, and the bigger the difference is, the further away, further and further away, two different angles can get from each other. Position yourselves well now. Make the right decisions at every Shalshalat moment. YU is a place where nothing is simple. Everything is complicated. Everything is complex. It might be very frustrating, but it'll teach you how to make decisions. Make the right decisions. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Shalom, Rabbi.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great week of learning. Shabbat shalom. See you next week.